Good morning and welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson sitting to my right in studio. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to see you as well. We're going to get right at this because there's been a significant decision from the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal when it comes to First Nations children, and you have gone through this with a fine-tooth comb.
That's true. The decision from the Human Rights Tribunal was just released the other day after many years of effort getting to this point. The decision deals with the funding of child welfare services on reserve. The way that works is the federal government, as a result of provision of the Canadian Constitution, has responsibility for the languages Indians and the land reserved for Indians by virtue of Section 91-24 of the Constitution, Constitution Act. For the last almost decade, this litigation has been percolating away with various things that caused it to take so long. They included things like the previous government not providing disclosure of all of the documents they were required to, which produced multiple adjournments, challenges which went to the federal court and the Federal Court of Appeal dealing with jurisdiction, and all manner of machinations. But finally we have it, and the decision deals with the whether there is discrimination in terms of the provision of child welfare services on reserve.
At the same level as there would be off reserve.
That's right. Off reserve, child welfare services are paid for by each province. But on reserve, because of that section of the Constitution that I've just referred to, it is a responsibility of the federal government to pay for those. The Human Rights Tribunal is analyzing the funding from the point of view of whether the level of funding provided by the federal government is discriminatory on the basis of, I think it's race or ethnic origin. Now, there's the starting point, of course, not of course, but the starting point is a picture of just how horrific some of the conditions for children are on reserves. The decision points out that now there are approximately three times the number of First Nations children that are under state care as opposed to the height of the residential school system in 1940.
That's pretty astounding.
It points out that Aboriginal children are more than twice as likely to be investigated compared to non-Aboriginal children.
What do we mean by investigated?
Complaint to social workers about the care of the child or abuse of the child. One of the other factual basis, Aboriginal children are twice as likely to be placed in out-of-home care as non-Aboriginal children. And it describes that Aboriginal cases predominantly involve situations of neglect or poverty, inadequate housing, parental substance abuse are a toxic combination of risk factors. So it paints simply an awful and embarrassing picture of conditions for children, and that's the starting point. Mm. Now, why might that be? The decision looks at the formula for how funding is provided, and the federal government doesn't provide the child welfare services directly. There aren't a team of federal employees doing this. They provide money to organizations that provide the actual services on the ground, okay, pursuant to sort of a framework of what they're supposed to do. That formula is based on the average number of children who are in care, about 6%, and the average number of families that require intervention from a social worker. That number was set at 20%, surprisingly and disappointingly high numbers, painting the picture of the very poor conditions, at least on some reserves. Now, one of the problems that's pointed out with the funding formula is, of course, there are going to be differing needs in different places. Well, that might be the average, You may have a place or a community which is particularly dysfunctional, which is a much higher need of help for children than others.
And that, does that skew the figures then?
Well, what happens is if you're the organization trying to provide care for children in a community where there's a higher need, you don't have more money to do that.
Gotcha.
Now, a couple of the other important principles in terms of child welfare, they include trying to make decisions which are in the best interest of the child, and as well, another sound principle would be sort of the least intrusive option. That's to say, if a social worker can do something to help parents do a good job caring for their child, that's much better than taking
the
child away.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, the funding formula, however, the way it's set up, is that there's this fixed formula for how much money is going to be provided to these agencies to do things like intervention with families to help them. However, once the child is apprehended, the cost of that is paid for on a dollar-for-dollar basis, which means that while the principle might be a best interest of the child and try to intervene as little as possible, don't take children away when there's better choices, the funding formula can make that impossible, or certainly encourage children to be apprehended in order to provide care.
That's a pretty damning account. Who would make that decision then to remove a child as opposed to having a social worker intervene and help the family and get back to a cohesive state? Because that's saying, hey, we're taking kids away from First Nations families because of money?
Yes, it would be social workers and it can be families. One of the tragic consequences of all of this that's discussed in the decision is that there could be circumstances where parents feel that they have no choice but to give their children up to the state in order to get the children help that they need.
Because that's the only way they can get the help.
That's right.
That's heartbreaking.
The social workers don't have the money and resources to do it unless the child is apprehended. So one of the cases that's referred to here that produced a principle called Jordan's principle that we can talk about if we have time was a circumstance where an Aboriginal child had serious medical conditions. There weren't adequate services on the reserve, so the child's family had to surrender the child to provincial care in order to get medical treatment for the child. The child was taken off reserve, that principle comes out of, after that occurred, the child, for the next 2 years, various government agencies argued about whose responsibility it was to pay for the foster home care for the child. The child wound up spending his entire life in hospital and passing away while the government agencies continued to argue about it. So it's you've got a funding formula that's been in place which both appears to have been inadequate and one which would favor decisions which may very well not be in the child's best interest. That's just not a good state of affairs.
Plenty more to come here on Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. Stay with us.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. If it's the Callwood Crawl or a mess on the Malahat, we've got your back with more traffic more often. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Your pet doesn't speak English, but you understand.
Hungry again?
Okay, let's cuddle.
I'll get the Frisbee. And Pets West understands how important it is to support local. They have the largest selection of local and Canadian-made pet products in town. Food, treats, beds, collars, leads and harnesses, scratching posts, and much, much more. You won't find a better selection of locally made pet products than at Pets West. Committed to your pet and supporting local business since 1989.
It's End of the Rolls 29th Annual Clearance Event, and we're bringing you the most incredible savings of the year. We're clearing out millions of dollars of top brand name flooring nationwide, so now's the time to get the best deals on laminate, hardwood, tiles, carpet, luxury vinyl tile, area rugs, and so much more. End of the Rolls 29th Annual Clearance Event on now. Visit endoftheroll.com. End of the Roll. Brand name flooring, low prices, always in stock. Come see our new location on 601 Beleskin.
Hi, I'm Robin Muir. If you're acting as a power of attorney for a family member,
It can be overwhelming trying to meet their income needs while developing a wealth transfer strategy to beneficiaries for the eventual estate distribution. Hatch & Muir can assist in providing a tax-efficient income to meet your loved one's needs and minimize taxes upon transfer of the assets to the next generation. Let us assist you and integrate our advice with your other professionals to build an effective plan together. Certified financial planners, online at hatchmuir.com. Hatch & Muir, we can help you.
Island Bakery presents another slice of life.
Baking bread is like a personal journey through a fine, productive day. We begin by rising. We work with our hands. We shape our lives. We know that even when the heat is on, some good will come of it. And finally, we take a slice of what we did and we feed our dreams for the next day. Bread, like the challenge of a new day, is the sustenance of life.
Island Bakery, from their family to yours, delivered fresh daily.
Hi, this is Niels from Total Prepare. Did you know we sell emergency food that has a 25-year shelf life? It's GMO-free, tastes fantastic, comes with lots of gluten-free options, and is great for campers and hikers, too. Would you like to keep your emergency water supply bacteria-free for 5 years? We have water stabilizers, water storage tanks, plus the award-winning portable Life Straw to filter any water source. Do you have an emergency kit? Come see our huge selection right here in Victoria at Total Prepare, or visit our website at totalprepare.ca.
You don't know where to go. Your tires are bald. You're overdue for service. Your car vibrates when you hit the highway. But you don't know where to go. Take it to Midas. On the island for close to 40 years and locally owned, Midas gives you the service of a local garage and the guarantees of a national chain. Midas mechanics are trained to fix everything. Appointments are recommended, but not necessary. Now you know where to go. Take it to Midas. Visit Midas.ca.
Growing your knowledge along with your plants. Gardening 101 with Jeff DeYoung. Sunday mornings at 10 on CFAX 1070. Bringing you deeper into the story. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson. We've been talking about the decision from the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal on First Nations children's concluding that children on reserves have been discriminated against, and you're underscoring some of the huge problems that exist. You did note one intellectual problem with the decision that should be noted to our listeners.
Yes. I mean, reading the decision, it's clear that the decision makers in this case were extremely and legitimately concerned with the appalling conditions of on reserve and the appalling quality of funding for child welfare services and what that means to children. So that's clear, and I think all of that is completely legitimate and well-founded on the evidence that they reviewed. They heard 72 days of evidence in this case. One of the sort of the intellectual challenges with all of this, however, is that the Human Rights Tribunal, given what its mandate is analyzing what's going on from the perspective of whether the children on reserve are discriminated against based on their ethnic origin. While there is excellent evidence in the decision about the poor conditions, the problems with the funding formula, one thing that was absent, and this was one of the principal arguments of the council for the previous government, was that there was no evidence as to the level of funding off reserve. So there was no comparative evidence as to how much funding is provided for an Aboriginal child not living on a reserve, or how much funding and what sort of services are provided in various provinces across the country.
And how that works out.
That's right. So it seems to me that the absence of that makes it challenging to come to the conclusion that there's been that form of discrimination, because there's no evidence of that difference. But with that being said, it's clear, and there's lots of evidence about the conditions and the degree of funding being inadequate and problematic.
Let's get to the phones. And Greg, good morning, Greg. You're on CFAX.
Hi, Pamela. Firstly, on a somewhat light note, thank you so much for turning me on to Blue Rodeo. You and Carol did that at Christmas time, and I've been playing it on my iPad ever since.
Oh, our pleasure. They're playing tonight here in Victoria
as well.
That's
right, yeah. Michael, three things. The first thing is the appalling Canadian genocide that this report again outlines, and I'm sure there are more shoes to drop on this file before we're finished. The second is the government-to-government brawling about who's got responsibility, jurisdiction, and probably most importantly, budget. But the one thing I want to talk about is the third thing which you referenced, and that is the appalling time it took to get this from initial application to final conclusion. Our system is broken if it takes us the better part of 10 years to solve this in the courts and the commission. Is there any way that we can find to expedite these things when they're of this significance?
Excellent.
Thanks, Pamela. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Greg.
Well, I suppose the public did one thing about that, which was to vote in a different government. The delay in this case, much of it appears to have been problems related to and delays caused by the federal government and
not
how they approached it.
Not producing the documents.
Not producing documents they were required to produce, producing 50,000 additional documents sort of immediately before a hearing, then producing 100,000 additional documents also late, causing, of course, adjournment. If you drop on the other side of a case like this 100,000 documents, well, what do you think is going to happen? Going to court and arguing about jurisdictional issues, appealing the jurisdictional issues. Just the whole approach to it was not an approach designed to get to the heart of the thing, which was, you know, what about these kids and how should we be helping them? The entire approach appears to have been from the previous government to obstruct this process and avoid paying the money that would be required to ensure that the kids are treated properly on reserves.
Beyond voting in a Liberal government, how can this process, as Greg pointed out, be expedited now so that something can tangible can be done? I know that Indigenous Affairs Minister Carolyn Bennett has waded in.
Yes, and I mean, to give you an idea in terms of the different approach, I mentioned previously one of the sort of the intellectual challenges with the decision being the absence of any comparable. Reading the thing from a legal perspective, you could easily see how somebody would say, well, why don't you just appeal this thing, do a judicial review? They didn't have that evidence. It could be tied up in court, I'm sure, for the next several years. But that hasn't been the approach now. The approach now has been, I think you're quoted as, this is my job to solve this, and we're going to fix this problem. So it's just a completely different approach. Rather than saying, you know, yeah, her quote is, my job is to go forward and fix these things. That's the new Indigenous Affairs Minister you just mentioned. So rather than continuing a fight in court, I think the federal government spent over $5 million opposing this process through the Human Rights Tribunal. Rather than that, and rather than arguing about the you know, the legal analysis with respect to the comparables, their response has been, we're fixing this problem. We need to do our best for the children.
Let's bring Murray in. Good morning, Murray. You're on CFAX.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'm a descendant of the treaty signer. My great-grandfather was a treaty signer. And the education, the health, and all these things that have been issues lately, mental health and all these things, all these were guaranteed to us for all time, and that still has not been honored. And when our children are still being abducted by the ministry, there is no investigation. And within my own family, there's three I know of my own family members that they went right to the school and scooped them out of the tribal school here at Sartlup without any investigation. And that caused a huge, huge scare into my late brother when he was still here when that happened. And to hear things that there's investigation. Well, there is no investigation a lot of the times. They go by hearsay a lot of these. And sometimes where the federal provincial is, the provincial government is interfering, they're actually breaking the law because we're federally governed, as the speaker just said a while ago, that we're federally governed. And to have provincial organizations come in. That's child abduction.
Murray, I'm sorry for what you've been through. Let's get Michael Mulligan's opinion here, his legal opinion, on jurisdiction.
I think it's agreed that this is the responsibility of the federal government to be funding, and that's what they're doing, albeit it would appear in an inadequate way. And I think a lot of this comes down to, rather than the sort of the legal analysis, sort of a philosophical approach to it. If you take a philosophical approach to it of how much money can we save and how little can we fund this for and how can we possibly keep increases to the absolute minimum and view this as a cost to be avoided and fought about, well, you get what we've had for the past decade or so, a bunch of litigation over this. If, on the other hand, you take the approach that children are our future, we need to make sure that they're supported and cared for, and that some of those important principles, like the best interest of the child and taking the least restrictive approach to getting to that result, if that's how you approach it, if you approach it as an investment and the children being important, you just have a different response to it. And that's why it's so heartening to see the current response, which is, my job is to go forward and fix these things, rather than an approach which is, how can I possibly obstruct this, slow it down, and pay as little as possible?
To that end, a quote from Justice Minister Jody Wilson-Raybould: it's difficult to put a price tag on not providing Indigenous children with the opportunity to be able to succeed. Final call from Joan. Good morning, Joan. You're on CFAX.
Oh, first of all, I would like to give a different perspective on this, and I don't wish to be cut off.
Oh, you've got 30 seconds, so go
okay.
ahead.
Well, the Fraser Institute determined that $52 billion a year were, processed through, which was used to be called Indian Affairs, and delivered to the reserves. And my thoughts are, now that they don't have to account for this money once again, these children, the money was there for them. It wasn't given to them or used for them. And I think there's a huge, huge issue of fraud there.
Thanks, Joan. Michael, any knowledge of that?
There's no suggestion anywhere here that the money that was provided to the child care agencies was used in a fraudulent way. No suggestion of that at all by the government or anyone else. The federal agency that provides the funding, their view is they provide the funding and they audit to make sure that it's used appropriately. This isn't money which is provided in some general way to a First Nation to do something. This is money which is paid to an organization to protect children.
When it comes down to it, there's a lot of fodder in here. From what stands out for you that is the most outstanding thing that could be done immediately to fix this?
Well, the most notable thing is this highlights the appalling conditions on reserves and the appalling conditions for children. And the immediate thing is the thing which is now being done, which is, rather than saying, how can we delay this some more, to take the approach that, how can we fix these problems and make sure that children are taken care of? They're our future, and I think that's the correct approach. And if that approach is taken, we'll waste a lot less money fighting in the Human Rights Tribunal, and we can put those resources into taking care of kids properly.
Yeah, there are kids on reserves as we speak that aren't going to be kids much longer. Thank you for your amazing work, as per usual, going through that significant decision from the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. Always a pleasure. Thank you.